Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. And this week, Dr. Foss welcomes her new co-host, Dr. Chagpar, to the program.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and what your role is here at Smilow.
I'm a breast cancer surgeon. That takes up a good lot of my time. The director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital, and I love that. I lead an outstanding team of professionals and researchers who are dedicated to really making a difference in breast cancer every day. I have another hat. I'm the assistant director for Yale Cancer Center, in charge of the portfolio of diversity and health equity, and we can talk a little bit more about that if you'd like in this show. And finally, I am the program director for Yale's Interdisciplinary Breast Cancer Fellowship. So I'm involved in education, I'm involved in teaching, research, as well as clinical care. So I wear all of those hats, and it's a real treat.
Those are a lot of things to talk about. But let's start first by having you tell us a little bit about the multidisciplinary breast program.
Okay. So we, as most really fine breast cancer programs, really embrace this multidisciplinary approach to patient management. So our breast radiologists, our breast pathologists, breast cancer surgeons, medical oncologists who just do breast cancer, radiation oncologists who just do breast cancer, really partner all together. We're located in the same environment. We meet with each other every week. We really have a very close relationship. We have a dedicated team of nurses and social workers, dietitians, physical therapists. One of the greatest things about breast cancer is that the team is so comprehensive that we really do care for the whole patient. And so that really is, as you say, this multidisciplinary aspect to breast cancer care.
And I know that your whole service there is very accessible, because I know I've called you a couple of times at the very last minute and said, I have a patient in my office. Can I send them right down?
Yeah.
And Anise always says, sure.
Absolutely. You know, I think that one of the things that's really important when you're a patient and you have breast cancer, or maybe you don't have breast cancer but you feel a lump, your anxiety level is through the roof. And one of the things that I've really tried to do at the Breast Center is really have that ability where we see patients as soon as possible, certainly within 3 to 5 days, and oftentimes on the same day if we can accommodate it. We want to do everything we can to enhance the patient experience.
So how do most patients actually come to you? Do they come, say, because they felt a lump, or do they come because they had a mammogram that was abnormal? What is the typical presentation to you?
Yeah, it really varies across the board. So many of our patients will come with a diagnosis of breast cancer. They've had a mammogram, they've been worked up by their family physician or their OBGYN, they would have had a biopsy closer to home, and then their family physician or OBGYN sends them to us for their more definitive, comprehensive management. Other people, however, will come to see us if they feel a lump, or if they've had a mammogram at Smilow and need a referral because they have an abnormal mammogram. All of those different aspects are part of the Breast Center. So, yeah, the breast imaging team, who is led by a fantastic breast imager by the name of Leanne Philpotts, work very closely with me as part of my leadership team at the Breast Center. So when Leanne or one of her crew of eight breast imagers see something on a mammogram, the surgeons, and we now have five incredible breast surgeons, are right side by side. So they come just as you would call me up and say, I've got a patient in knees, can you see them? The imagers would stop by the surgeon's office and say, can you see this patient? And we would do the same thing. So when patients come to see me and I say, geez, you know, I really need a mammogram or an ultrasound, they're often able to do that for me on the same day.
That's great. And I'm sure that that helps a lot of patients with that anxiety component that you mentioned.
Yeah. And the other piece is that we've got a really great system of social work and psycho-oncology. We partner very closely with physical therapy, with complementary therapy, with our boutique.
Anise, you mentioned something else that really intrigued me, and that is the concept of the breast cancer fellowship. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think what has really revolutionized breast cancer care, well, there have been many things that have done that, but one of them is this understanding and realization that breast cancer care is really a specialty. It's something where you really want whoever is doing your breast surgery to be a breast cancer surgeon, because then they'll understand how surgery integrates with all of those other components. So in order to do that, you want somebody who has trained specifically in breast cancer care. And that's what a fellowship is. So after medical school and residency, where people train, for example, to become a surgeon, they can then do a fellowship where they subspecialize in breast cancer surgery. And so it's really great that we're able to offer that kind of subspecialty training to our fellows. And the nice thing is that our fellows not only get dedicated training with the surgeons, but they also spend time in breast medical oncology and radiation oncology, pathology, imaging, even out in the community, survivorship, high risk, so that they really understand all of those components, which makes them even better breast cancer surgeons when they get out into the community.
So do most of your graduates actually go to community jobs, or do they go into other academic teaching jobs?
They've done both. So we've had fellows that have gone on to university positions. We've had fellows go on to community jobs as well. So it really is tailored to what they want to do in terms of their own individual practice. I'm just really glad that we're able to provide them with really state-of-the-art training.
You also mentioned the concept of getting into the community, and I know that you've been very active in the community. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing?
Yeah, so one of the great things about New Haven and about Connecticut and the Northeast in general, actually the world in general, is that there are so many individuals out there who are passionate about breast cancer awareness and screening and getting the message out. And with October just around the corner, there are so many great events that I have just been blessed to be a part of. So, you know, on September 28th, there will be about 160 construction workers and medical people and patients and advocates all lined up in a big pink ribbon on the lawn of the Anlian Center for what's called the Pink Hard Hat event, which is really to get awareness out there for breast cancer. There are a number of other events. There's a pink picnic, a beat jam. I'm part of a movement called Fit Week, where not only are we encouraging people to raise awareness about physical fitness, but also, because this is going to be in October, raise their awareness about breast cancer. There's an event called Art Bra. There's another where we're partnering with a local pasta maker to make pink pasta. All of this is really about making sure that people are aware about breast cancer, that it's completely something that we can do something about, encourage screening, encourage early detection. It's wonderful to be part of all of those events.
Anise, can you talk a little bit about what's happening at the level of the state with respect to breast cancer? Are there those kinds of activities happening on a state level, or are they mostly community-based activities?
So I think that, you know, it's across the board. There are a lot of homegrown activities that are really grassroots and very local. But there are also statewide things. There are things that, for example, American Cancer Society does, or Komen, or other organizations, even on a national front. And as I say, even globally, there are events all over the world that are really focused on raising awareness about breast cancer.
If a woman out there wants to get involved and become an advocate, can you give us some recommendations as to how she would start? Where would she go, for instance, and how would she initiate that?
Right. Well, I think, you know, one of the things to do is you could always talk to your healthcare provider. You could always contact a cancer center local to you. So certainly, you know, Yale would be able to provide all of those avenues to you. Talking to other community organizations, the American Cancer Society or others. And talking to other breast cancer survivors, oftentimes people really know a lot of the events that are going on. And even if they don't, some of the best ideas have come from advocates and survivors who come up with an idea on their own, champion a cause, and then just go for it. And you know, we've had so many people come to us and say, we want to do X, Y, Z, and it has been so wonderful to partner with them.
There have been a lot of exciting things happening in the whole breast cancer world, obviously what you're doing here in the community, but can you talk a little bit about the Smilow Cancer Hospital and some of the academic programs and some of the exciting research?
Yeah, so there is no end to the fantastic research that is going on, both at Smilow and Yale, as well as, you know, around the country and around the world. But speaking just from a personal standpoint of some of the work that I've been doing, we're really making huge strides. Clinical trials are just so pivotal, and we have got some fantastic trials ongoing, some in surgery, like the Shave Margin trial, which is a trial of mine, where we're really looking at how we can optimize doing surgery for patients with breast cancer. There are some fascinating trials that Lajos Pusztai is heading up. Lajos is actually our new chief of breast medical oncology. He is just a dynamo who came from MD Anderson and has some incredible ideas about how we can take genetics and genomics, find out where the mistakes are, find out in a person's cancer, find out how we can tailor that cancer and really make a difference. He, Francine, you know, if I have one suggestion for you, it would be to get Lajos on this show, because he is just a fountain of information and a wealth of knowledge.
Absolutely. That's a great suggestion. Right now, we're going to take a quick break for a medical minute and then come back to talk with Dr. Chagpar about her work in the Breast Center.
The American Cancer Society estimates that the lifetime risk of developing colorectal cancer is about 1 in 20, and that risk is slightly lower in women than in men. Early detection is the key. When detected early, colorectal cancer is easily treated and highly curable. Men and women over the age of 50 should have regular colonoscopies to screen for this disease. Each day, more patients are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving colorectal cancer survivors more hope than they ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for colorectal cancer. New options include a Chinese herbal medicine being used in combination with chemotherapy to reduce side effects of treatment and help cancer drugs work more effectively. This has been a Medical Minute, and more information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Francine Foss, and I'm joined today by my new co-host, Dr. Anise Chagpar, who's also my guest tonight. And we're talking about breast cancer. So we touched on a lot of the things that you're doing, Anise, but I was particularly intrigued about the SHAVE protocol that you mentioned. Could you talk a little bit more in detail about that? Tell us exactly what that trial is and what the impact of that is going to be.
Yeah. So, Francine, you might have read in the New York Times not so long ago about this whole concept that women who have breast cancer can have breast conservation. So no longer is it mandated that if you have breast cancer, you have to lose the breast. But one of the things that's important when we just remove the tumor in women who have breast cancer while keeping the rest of the breast there is that we get what's called a margin. So this is normal tissue that we take out surrounding the tumor. That's kind of like an insurance policy that really makes us very comfortable that we've taken out the whole tumor and not left any cancer cells behind. So one of the issues is that when we do that, I often tell my patients that there's only two people who can tell you anything for sure: God and the pathologist. So while I try to take out the cancer in a rim of normal tissue all the way around, there's always a possibility that the pathologist afterwards, and it takes them really about a week to fully analyze every aspect of that margin, may come back and say to me, you know what, there is a little cancer cell at the edge here. And if the pathologist says that, then I have to go back and take out a little bit more. Well, no patient, and certainly no physician, ever wants to take the patient back to the operating room. So it's been a controversy, not only here at Yale, but around the country, as to how do we optimize this surgical procedure? Should we take a little bit more while we're there? So some surgeons will routinely take a little bit of extra tissue all the way around in the hopes that they will then reduce the chances that we would need to go back. Other surgeons say, well, why do that? You could simply just take a larger piece of tissue initially, because taking a little bit extra might not guarantee you that you'll reduce the chances of going back. And what effect does this have on the cosmetic outcome, on the intraoperative time, and so on? It's a difficult question, and we are at what we call equipoise, which is that all of the surgeons are kind of scratching their head. Half of them take a little bit extra, half of them don't. What we want to do is we want to figure out the answer so that we can provide patients with the very best care. So the SHAVE protocol is essentially that. Patients who have this surgery, we take out what we would normally take out. We actually x-ray the specimens right in the operating room. I'm able to see it right in the operating room. We have technology that transports it to our radiologists electronically. So they call us in the operating room. So we have a second set of eyes looking at what we took out. So we use every possible aspect that we can to make sure that we've got that out. And then, once we're happy, patients are randomized to either take a little bit more, just a little bit, or no, not. And we're going to see which way of doing this procedure actually leads to better outcomes. It's a fantastic protocol and one that a lot of surgeons around the country are really excited about.
Are you enlisting the help of other facilities and other academic centers to do this trial?
So many academic centers have actually expressed interest in doing this study, but currently we're only doing this at Yale. We are accruing very well to this study. We're well over 100 patients now. So likely the study will close to accrual within the next year and a half at most. And so we'll be able to provide those answers very quickly. Oftentimes for other centers to start up this protocol will take them some lead time. And so they're all waiting to see what the answers are that are going to come out of Yale.
Can you explain the process for a woman, how she would actually get involved in this clinical trial?
Well, as with all clinical trials, there are a number of ways to do it. Number one is to be an educated patient. So patients can find out about clinical trials that are going on anywhere in the country because all clinical trials need to be registered with a government website. So you can go on the web and you can look up what clinical trials are available close to you. You can often check out the cancer center's website at whatever cancer center you're going to see what clinical trials are available. And then when you see your physician, your surgeon, your medical oncologist, because certainly there are trials not only in surgery, but in every aspect of medicine, talk to your physician. Be proactive. Ask about whether there are any clinical trials that you're eligible for. Remember always that patients who participate in clinical trials tend to do better than patients who don't. So it's in your best interest to participate in clinical trials. Plus, you really help to advance the standard of care for all of the women and men who come after you. All of the greatest advances that we've had in medicine to date have been because of the champions of people who have participated in clinical trials.
In this trial, you mentioned that women are randomized. So does the woman actually find out what arm they got randomized to? And that is that really something that should make a difference to that woman in terms of their thinking about their care?
So because of the design of the study, we couldn't pick people and say, would you like to be in one group or would you like to be in another? Because that would bias the results. So both the physician and the woman at the time of the surgery do not know what group they're in. That really makes it such that we do the very best operation we can right at the time. The beauty of this trial is that the randomization, the magic envelope that is opened after we've done our optimal surgery. So you're quite right. Women don't know what group they're randomized to. Neither did the surgeon prior to the surgery. Women do find out which group they were randomized to after the fact, but one of the nice things is that we really partner with women in this study. Remember, one of the things that I said was we want to find out whether this makes a difference to cosmetic outcome. Well, the person to whom cosmetic outcome makes the biggest difference is the patient. So we ask patients after the surgery, what do you think about your cosmetic outcome? And they rank what they think, you know, fair, good, excellent, outstanding. And then they're told what group they were randomized to so that that doesn't bias their own interpretation of their cosmetic results. I think patients really enjoy being part of the trial.
Sounds like it would be really interesting to see what your results are also.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
You also have some other exciting trials that you mentioned to me over the break, and one of them was this trial that involved exercise and mindfulness. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so another great thing about Yale is our close collaboration with our School of Public Health. So Yale and Harvard, the Dana-Farber, are jointly doing this trial, which is looking at the biologic impact of exercise and mindfulness on cancer. Because we've always thought that exercise is good for you, mindfulness is good for you. We think that this has a positive effect on stress. And stress, we know, may be related to your immune system, and your immune system may have something to do with cancer. So when we connect the dots, we kind of think that maybe exercise and or mindfulness may really have a positive impact on the fundamental biology of cancer. But we're into robust science here, and so we're really looking at not just the psychological aspects of these, but the biological ones. So the way that this trial works is patients who have cancer are randomized again. Either you get exercise, a great intervention, or you get mindfulness, another great intervention. And we take a biopsy before the intervention. And then you have that. Then at the time of your surgery, we check the biologic markers again, comparing it to the biopsy that was taken before the intervention. So we're really looking at what impact did that exercise or that mindfulness have on the tumor biology. A really cool study.
And how long does that study go on for us? The exercise program, how long is that?
So it doesn't delay your surgery, because that's another thing that patients often ask. They say, well, geez, you know, I don't want to delay my surgery. And it really doesn't. So the intervention can be as short as 2 to 4 weeks. And oftentimes, patients are still in the preoperative planning process, especially if they need to see a plastic surgeon and coordinate reconstruction and so on. And so here, they're really doing something positive while they're waiting. Another similar trial to that one is a study that Erin Hofstadter, our high-risk specialist here at Yale, is doing, looking at black cohosh, which is a natural substance which may have preventative effects in a precancer that we call DCIS, except in that one, we don't even need to get the biopsy at baseline. She's really looking at the effects at the time of surgery. So another great trial.
And are all patients with breast cancer eligible for these trials?
For the most part, each trial will have some inclusion and exclusion criteria. So for example, in the exercise trial, your tumor needs to be at least 1.5 centimeters because we need to take a little piece beforehand, and we want to make sure that our pathologist has enough tissue to look at in terms of making a diagnosis. In Erin's study, the one with the black cohosh, she's really looking not at invasive cancers, the kind that can spread, but precancers or DCIS, because she really thinks that this black cohosh may have preventative effects in this early stage. So again, for every patient, there is a clinical trial. Really ask your doctor. There are so many fantastic interventions that are available.
So Anise, you've done a lot of work over a number of years now in breast cancer, and I'm wondering if you could just talk with our audience about what you think the important questions are and what you think we need to be doing next for research.
Yeah, so I mentioned before the break a little bit about Lajos Pusztai, and I think that that's probably one of the most exciting things that is going on in breast cancer research right now, and probably in cancer research in general, is this whole notion of genomics and personalized medicine and figuring out how your cancer is different from my cancer. And not only that, but what we can target in your cancer that would be just targeting your cancer cells. So another cool study that Lajos and I are actually doing right now is looking at tumor heterogeneity and next generation whole genome sequencing, which sounds like a big fancy Star Trek-y type term, that's really looking at how different cancers are different even within the cancer, really giving us insights into tumor biology. So I think that that's probably one of the most exciting things. But again, whenever we talk about breast cancer research, I'm always like a kid in a candy shop. There is so many wonderful things going on in every aspect. It's just phenomenal.
Do you think we know all the answers yet?
No, not yet. But I think that we're getting there. And I think that the more that we have people in the community who are advocating, who are raising funds, who are supporting us, we've got administrators who are looking at programs and supporting us that way. We've got researchers in the clinic who are spending night and day trying to find these answers and pairing with clinicians who are really focused on how do we translate what they're doing in the lab to really make a difference at the bedside. I think that that's the perfect storm. And so we're getting closer and closer every day. It's a complicated puzzle, and it's one that, you know, it's kind of like you keep peeling back the onion skin and finding another layer and another layer. It becomes ever more intriguing, but we really are making huge strides in it getting really, really close.
We talk a lot about this molecular profiling of tumors and the genomics and all the fancy testing that we can do nowadays. Do you think that that kind of approach will raise more questions than answers? And how do we actually sort through all that data that we get?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, it's the boondoggle of genomics, right? Is that we're getting so much data and we're trying to figure out all of these complicated pathways and molecules. And so another one of our great partners is bioinformatics. And really, how do we analyze all of this data that's coming out? These are good problems to have.
And I think for the individual woman listening, thinking, well, gee, should I get my tumor profiled? Should I get genomics done on my tumor? What is your response to that?
Well, I think that, you know, you should talk to your doctor. There are many ways and trials that use that technology that might be really useful.
Dr. Anise Chagpar is Associate Professor of Surgical Oncology and Director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.